Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to part two of episode 45 of Why Are People Into That? The podcast that's totally overexposed. This month's guest is erotic photographer Ellen Stagg. In part two, Ellen tells the story of the time she, somewhat unintentionally, put her own asshole on display. So, I'm doing workshops on both coasts in the next 2 weeks. On Thursday, February 23rd, I'll be at the San Francisco Armory, that's the kink.com porn palace in the Mission, teaching my impact play class. So that's like spanking, flogging, rough sex, face slapping, and there will be a hot demo at that one. Tickets are on Eventbrite or armorystudios.com. Then I'll be at the New York City Pleasure Chest on March 1st teaching my threesome class. Now that one is free. Yes, that's right. It's free. And it's at the Upper East Side Pleasure Chest store. Visit pleasurechest.com to find out more. In the meantime, follow at Tina Horns S on Twitter and Instagram to get updates on my published articles and live events and all of my selfies in American Apparel going out of business sale leotards. Visit whyarepeopleintothat.com, subscribe to the podcast on Acast and iTunes. Please take a few seconds to write us a review and tell your friends about the show. The more people that listen, the more sustainable the show is for me to do. So as my fans and my listeners, it really makes a difference. Thank you so much. And if you do listen to Why Are People Into That and would like to help me keep the lights on while getting access to exclusive content, pledge me a little paper at patreon.com/TinaHorn. That's patreon.com/TinaHorn. So, sharpen up your male gaze or your female gaze or your gender queer gaze and tune in to part two of Why Are People Into Erotic Photography. So when we were texting about this episode last night, you sent me the Wikipedia page for the English idiom, a picture is worth a thousand words. And I'm wondering if you can speak to the relationship between that idiom and...
Am I dyslexia?
Well, please, yes. But also, yeah, like, so what is the relationship between your dyslexia and a picture being worth a thousand words and your interest in taking erotic photographs, but also maybe more in general, people's interest in erotic photography?
Well, I think... I sent you that because I was thinking about how you're going to maybe possibly title this podcast about photos or pretty pictures or something of that. And I was like, why do people like photographs so much? Why do people look at Instagram as much as they do?
Yeah.
And I think it is because not just even photos, but paintings and stuff, they anything that's a two-dimensional image can say so much to somebody. And I think people, depending on which side of the bed they woke up to that morning, will have a different reaction to it. And it does speak a thousand words, one image, because you especially a great, the best photographs, I think, have mystery in it. And you have to sit there and ponder them and think about them and the story that's behind them. And I brought up my dyslexia because I am horribly dyslexic and I hate writing. I have to do it a lot. And it drives me crazy. But I would rather just take a picture and show people that's how I feel about something. I think photos are so great to everybody because of it has memory to them. But he knows that photos are iconic. So, or like I guess would be a famous semi-erotic picture is that one of
what's that actress's name who died the day before Michael Jackson?
Farrah Fawcett. That Farrah Fawcett poster of her with the red bathing suit on and her nipples are hard. And supposedly that sold like millions.
Oh, yeah. Of every teenage boy had that in his high school bedroom.
Yeah. And I described that picture for 2 seconds once I said the actress's name. And you know that image. It like flashed into your head.
Right.
And everybody listening to this podcast knows that image.
Absolutely.
It does speak more than 1,000 words. It's iconic. It will last forever.
Well, it's interesting too because if you think about the popularity of that poster of Farrah Fawcett, part of why it was so popular, I would imagine, is that everybody can project their own story onto it, right?
Totally.
So like everyone that has ever masturbated to that image has their own scenarios or their own character that they assume that this person has, right? So it's evocative enough, but it does leave a lot to the imagination. I mean, it's not,
and that's why you could hang it on your
wall. It's not a nude spread.
Yeah,
you know, it's not a centerfold.
No.
And that, right, exactly. And so it also has you could put it up in your teenage bedroom because it's a girl in a bathing suit, but it's not like
The fact that her nipples are hard just gives you that enough titillation.
Yeah totally.
And it transcends everything. Like,
so, no, go ahead.
It just transcends everybody's thought process. And even it was in everybody's, every boy's room, every girl wanted to be her in that picture.
Right.
And it was like all American.
Right. And she's got that big pearly white smile.
And that hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so when it comes to people who are attracted to pictures of people that they find attractive versus wanting to look at hardcore sexual imagery or videos, what do you think, why do you think people are into that? What is the difference in the appeal?
I was thinking maybe it has to do with objectification.
Tell me more.
One thing that I think people get confused all the time is the difference between exploitation and objectification.
Yeah, they're totally different.
They're totally different, but I think a lot of people think it's the same thing.
Tell me, oh my God, you're singing my song. tell me your thoughts on this.
My thought is if I photograph you,
yeah,
the moment that I'm taking the picture, yes, you're a three-dimensional human being.
Yeah, you're making
thoughts.
But you're making an object out of
me. But I'm making a two-dimensional object out of you.
Right. You're taking a three-dimensional person with my hopes and dreams and desires and boundaries of my own, and you're flattening me.
Yeah and I'm also choosing a certain angle on you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm choosing a certain way of posing you and making the image look beautiful and turning you into an object.
Yeah,
so I don't think objectification is bad at all.
I agree.
I think unless a married man objectifies his wife, that's a different story. Like, but I objectify Tom Hardy every single day.
Well, I just want to stop you and say, like, what is the difference between a man objectifying his wife and you objectifying Tom Hardy or a celebrity or Madonna or whatever?
I had a model once who was married. I'm not going to say her name, but she's since divorced. And I remember the reason she broke up with her husband was because she said that she would go out with him and he'd be like, isn't my wife so hot? Look at this arm candy that I have.
Right.
That was him objectifying her.
Totally.
And flaunting her to all his friends. And she was just like, I was sick of that. Like, yeah. I wasn't his wife anymore. I was an object for him to, like, flaunt in people's faces like the new iPhone.
God, that.
So objectifying your wife is a bad idea.
Well, so, but what if your wife wants you to objectify her? Like, here are some ways that a wife could want her husband to objectify her. The wife could feel like, first of all, the wife could say, it would really turn me on. I'm an exhibitionist. It would really turn me on if you take sexy pictures of me. So then he's, by the terms that you were just describing, he's flattening her, he's objectifying her, he's turning, like, but making all of, framing her and making all of the choices that he's making about taking a picture of her, he is, like, creating the picture, creating the image, creating an object out of her. But the difference between that and the scenario you were describing of her as the status object, the arm candy, the iPhone, like, the beautiful house, the, you know, the beautiful car.
Well, I think the consent right there.
Well, and the agency is what I was going to say, right? The difference is the agency, and this is what, and we can get at, this gets at exploitation. I want to hear what you have to say about it, but this is the intellectual, like, lift that I think is so hard for people, and I think is crucial that we discuss how to make this intellectual lift, because if you, the same action with or without agency changes the nature of the objectification, mm-hmm. right? So if a husband says to his wife, I want to take all of these sexy pictures of you and, for example, like, put them on my Instagram, and he's only focused on, like, the people who are liking the pictures and the people who are saying you have such a hot wife, right? Like, that is objectifying her. Like, he doesn't care about her agency. He doesn't care about her personality.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about what she likes or what she wants or how she feels about these pictures on his Instagram.
What she's consenting to.
Exactly. He's, like, only concerned with how he can, like, use her for this end, right? But if the if the same man, you know, if the same wife says to her husband, I want you to take sexy pictures of me, or even if he says to her, I want to take sexy pictures of you, like, because you are so beautiful and I worship you and I'm obsessed with you and I want to have these pictures to look at when I'm not with you, and, like, taking the pictures together will be hot for both of us, having the pictures forever will be hot for both of us, or perhaps we can hire Ellen Stagg to come in and take these pictures so that we will have them for posterity forever. Like, let's go to Ellen Stagg .com and see what her reasonable rates are, you know, like that collaboration, that involvement of her, like, that respect of her agency, that, like, consent for how those images are, for the life of those images and how they're being used, changes the whole scenario.
Yes.
Right? And so it changes objective.
But then she's also agreeing to being objectified.
That's right.
Yeah.
And also, by the way, like, like, being objectified is really hot.
Yeah.
Like, being the object of, you know, we have such
of
a, like,
desire.
We have like, such a pejorative connotation with objectification, but, like, I kind of can't actually really, like, bottom or get fucked unless I feel like I'm being objectified. Like I need to feel like that person is just, like losing their mind with how hot I am.
Yeah.
And just, like, overcome with desire to fuck my brains out.
Yeah.
Like, I actually need that. And if I'm too much in my head, if I'm thinking too much about, like, my personality and my agency and, like, then I kind of am, like, not so getting into it.
Yes.
But the mind fuck about it is that I have to be in the space, the sort of psychic space where I know ultimately that that person, like, does respect me so that I can feel like I'm just a whole.
Yes, of course.
I mean, that makes sense to you and me.
Yeah.
Why is that so hard for people to understand?
Because I think people think pervert and objectification are bad words where they're not bad words.
So what are we going to do about it?
Educate them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always think when it comes to exploitation, my stepmother, my father is, and I've even thanked him in my book.
Yeah.
My father is very supportive of my work.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And he's like an old white conservative dude.
Yeah.
he's not a Republican anymore, but he's conservative, wears a blazer. But his wife, my stepmom, thinks that I'm exploiting all my models and hates my work because of it.
Right. And she, I'm guessing, just because I know the type, I'm guessing that in her mind, a naked woman is always being exploited.
Oh, yes.
Because she can't wrap her mind around.
Except for if it's old art in the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Well, there you go.
Of a naked woman. Then that's classic and beautiful. That goes back to your talk difference between erotica and porn.
Right,
you know?
and the classist nature of that. Right. Like, first of all, we have no idea if, you know, if the models for everything that is in the Met were exploited, like actually they probably were
they
exploited
were most definitely
way worse.
Yeah. Number one. Now. Number two, the reason most art becomes famous is because of controversy.
Interesting.
Beautiful paintings don't become famous because they're beautiful. There's controversy behind a lot of this good art that we now deem as good art and hang on the wall. So,
oh my God. I mean, you can even see that with like a ton of 20th century art. I mean, even like look at rock and roll, right? Like how, you know.
But
I
even
mean,
Michelangelo.
Sure, sure.
Like the David statue was controversial.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was a homo. Somebody actually posted today, Merritt Kay, who was on the show a couple of months ago talking about cocksucking, is doing a new queer magazine. I forget what it's called. I'm sure it'll be huge by 2018, but the Twitter for this new magazine said the last time that we had a critical mass of queer artists, we called it the Renaissance.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But yeah, my dad even says that to my stepmom all the time. And she judges my work because I'm exploiting my models. And my dad says this, the work that we go and see in museums, these people were probably exploited. There was controversy behind that.
Yeah.
Ellen's work could be looked like that for 100 years from now.
What do you think your stepmom thinks exploitation is?
I never thought to even ask her that because I just don't want to get in the conversation. Well,
no,
with
totally.
Her.
And those conversations are so emotional.
Oh yeah.
You know.
I don't know. Whatever makes her feel uncomfortable, I
guess.
Well,
you've totally hit the nail on the head. I totally agree.
Like when I was listening to your podcast about the occult, you guys were talking about consent.
Yeah.
And how consent about just bare-breasted outside in New York City. It's legal, but to the people viewing it, somebody on the street, like a tourist, might think that you're ruining their consent by seeing breasts.
Right.
And I'm paraphrasing.
No,
obviously.
No. That is so. That is an ongoing issue.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm interrupting my stepmom's view.
Yeah.
And that's why she feels exploited by what she's looking at, and she's then displacing that her exploitation onto my photographs and my models.
Oh, man.
But I try to always explain to people, I'm like, how could I be exploiting them when I don't even pay them?
Well, I mean, I think that not paying someone
could even be more
is certainly probably the most common form of exploitation.
Well, but I
but you no go ahead.
But I but they walk in knowing that they get to use the content. It's a fair trade.
Well, and that's why I opened this episode by breaking that down, you know, because you know, I'm the subject of the ethics of paying people for their labor is one that is very important to me in the realm of nude modeling and also other realms. And so, you know, but on that, you know, and of course there's this, you know, horrible, you know, pandemic situation of people thinking that they can, you know, get people to do their labor for free in exchange for exposure, which, yes. you know, as yes. many people have joked, exposure kills. So,
yeah.
you know,
there's that new thing, freelance isn't free.
Yeah. Well, yeah. no. Yeah. Freelance isn't free. Exactly. Yeah. And but so that's why I wanted to emphasize the fact that, like, I think that a clearly negotiated trade where both parties involved feel that what they are getting for the trade is of, like, comparable
yeah.
value,
yeah.
I think is absolutely, especially in an underground economy, is like non-exploitative,
yes.
right? Because again, it's about agency,
yes.
right? So, you know, I mean, the thing that I think is ironic about, and, you know, I don't mean to harp on your stepmom, but just, like, using your stepmom as, like, the, you know, stand-in for the Gloria Steinems and the Gail Dines and, you know, the people of the world who probably, like, you know.
Well, my stepmom is the age of Gloria Steinem, so.
That's right.
And she's a Democrat who lives in Massachusetts, who went to the Women's March in Boston.
Totally.
So she thinks of herself as a feminist.
Yeah,
so,
and she is. I mean, yes. that's the thing about feminist discourse is that
there's so many different levels to it.
Well, and yeah. also, like, you know, I identify as a feminist, like somebody else, you know, Gloria Steinem identifies as a feminist, and on some way, there are some ways that Gloria Steinem and I, like, really agree with each other more than the average person, but there are some things that we, like, really disagree on.
Yes.
And it's a problem.
Yes.
Because I'm right and she's wrong. but the, you know, one example of that is that, you know, Gloria Steinem is an example of a second wave white upper middle class feminist who, you know, believes that all, well, I don't know if she believes that, like, all, that I don't know actually if Gloria Steinem would think that Stag Street was exploitation, because Gloria Steinem does talk about this idea of, like, erotica and, like, classy, sexy pictures that are, like, a, you know, that like don't exploit women, but also, like, who gets to separate the, like, porn that exploits, that depicts women who are being exploited or raped, and the porn that doesn't, like, who makes that distinction?
Yes.
I mean, this is a far bigger subject, but I'm curious, you know, how you feel about that, because I hear that and I immediately think the people who have the most power are going to be the people who decide how to separate those things, and they are going to put the things that make them uncomfortable, which probably is going to include kink, fetish, queer imagery, the imagery of sexuality that they don't relate to or they don't understand, which is probably going, you know, probably also, like, you know, bodies that are not, you know, like, considered conventionally sexy, you know, bodies of people who aren't white, like, those are the things that are going to get put in the, like, obscene pile.
Yes.
And burnt.
Yeah.
And not being given an opportunity to make money off of their art, which, by the way, that's exploitation.
Yes.
So I guess what I'm getting at is talking about, like, you know, when the people with the most power are given power by the people to censor,
yes.
What kind of sexually explicit imagery they're allowed to see.
Which censorship is another topic I wanted to talk about today.
Well, tell me how you feel about censorship.
Well,
have you had experiences with your work being censored?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me more.
My first favorite story about censorship, my work getting censored, was, I don't know if you remember Nerve.com's.
Oh, yeah.
They had a print issue.
I do remember that.
It was maybe they did about six issues. It mm-hmm. was like one full year. And I was in every single issue but one. And the one issue I wasn't in was because I was out of town. Like,
yeah.
they tried to contact me. Mind you, this is back in 2000. So email was not as frequent.
Yeah.
It wasn't as easy to get a hold of somebody
totally.
Back then. So one of the first issue that I was in, they wanted a self-portrait. And I had this picture I did back in school and at SVA. And I set up my camera with a remote control. And I was so curious because at the time I was very, very skinny. But I felt like when I sat down, my hips seemed so big.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a picture of myself. I know this is a podcast and nobody's going to see, but
I'll describe what's happening.
I took a picture of myself kneeling on the couch with my back to the camera. So my ass was like as spread out as possible so I could really see how thick my hips were.
So Ellen is now on my couch facing the wall. on her knees in the sort of what I think of as the like Britney Spears baby one more time squat, but with her feet together. I mean, also this is a pose that I've been asked to do in
well, I think in a lot of photo shoots. The ass look bigger because of the way you're pushing versus standing up,
and then it also accentuates the like contrast between like the size of the waist yes. And the size of the booty, because the juice, like gravity, kind of helps the juice like
you know, overflow
exactly. It's also kind of like the Man Ray picture of
with the violin
or the cello, yeah you know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
yeah.
So I
you went to art school.
I did.
I don't know the name of that picture.
I don't, but I guess we could look it up later.
I think that people know what we're talking about. Yes. Just like the National Geographic cover or yes. Farrah Fawcett photo. I'm sure people know what we're talking about.
I wanted to know in a photograph, because you can't really see in a mirror really what's going on. So I set up a timer and
I wanted to see how powerful your ass was.
Yes, I wanted to see the power of my ass. So I took this picture. I intentionally was butt naked but had on socks, and I rubbed my socks all over the floor to make them extra dirty. Like, so if you, I think you might be able to Google the picture. It might be somewhere out there, but if not, I'll send it to you, whatever. Great. So,
I love dirty socks and dirty feet, by the way, in case anyone, in case that's news, not news to any of my listeners.
And mind you, this is 17 years ago, so I didn't even realize the power of foot fetishes back then. Right. But I liked that idea. Like, I was like, I'm gonna be nude with dirty socks on. So I took the picture, I got a contact sheet, because this is with film, mind you, this isn't even digital. So I got the film developed.
Like the year 2000?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, 99, 2000 was my senior year of college. So I developed the picture. I see a contact sheet. I see which one I really like, and I blow it up.
Yeah.
And I'm at school, and we're doing it in a dark room. So I make the image. I put it through the machine, and a minute later, it shoots out the machine.
Yeah.
When it shoots out the machine, there's usually a handful of people waiting for this, their images. So they're going to see what you're working on, too.
Sure.
It shoots out the machine, and there's my asshole.
Yeah.
I didn't realize my asshole was going to be so prominent. And I was like, holy shit. I didn't realize that sitting that way made my asshole go bing. Like,
you know, this is why.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You live and you learn.
But I was, my first reaction was to be embarrassed.
Sure.
Because I have posed naked out there, but you won't see any spread vagina of me.
Yeah.
So why would I put my asshole on display?
Sure.
So at first I was embarrassed. And then I said to myself, why am I embarrassed of my asshole?
And see, that's the step that a lot of people don't get to. People are like, I'm embarrassed, I'm uncomfortable, like shut down, panic room,
rip
like
this nobody up, burn it.
Yeah, nobody gets in, nobody gets out. Yeah. Like but yeah, so I think that you're already getting at probably what is like a good prescription for our society, is that people should like feel their embarrassment, feel their discomfort, and then when they're ready, move on to the next step, which
or do what I do and post the picture in my classroom and have a discussion on it.
Well, I think it's reasonable to expect people to ask themselves why they're uncomfortable, and then for the Ellen Staggs of the world, blow it up and post it.
I posted it in my classroom. I had a discussion about it. I discussed how uncomfortable I felt about my asshole being on display, but I was trying to dig in why I felt. But I made this image intentionally. I wanted this picture of myself.
Well, you know what? This is a great story, because you were trying to explore your own relationship to your body. And in doing so, you realize that you weren't even cognizant of this part of your body that is considered dirty and obscene. Yeah. You're not even thinking like, oh, that's going to be a part of this picture. Because the way that we think about like the ass is totally different from the way that we think about the butthole.
Yeah. So my butthole's on display. So Nerve magazine asked me for a self-portrait, and I was like, I'm gonna give them this one.
But how did people in your class, and your like professors and stuff at art school react to that?
I think I had two classes that year, actually. I had one called Sex and Photography, and then my thesis class. I don't know if I hung it up in both classes, because this is, mind you, 17 years ago. I probably did, because I loved pushing people's buttons. And so Sex and Photography, I bet they all applauded me for it. And my thesis class, they were all like, whoa, what do we do? Like heads spinning. I don't know what to do with this. Like there's Ellen's asshole. So I don't, I remember just not even caring. Like I was just like, hey, if I'm fucking someone's day up, good. They're going to remember me and my asshole. So,
oh my God, that's the soundbite of the season. It's the soundbite of the season. I love it. I'm going to put that in commercials for this show. See if I don't.
So I gave it to Nerve and they loved it.
Yeah.
And then the magazine came out. And
what year was that?
2000.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was like, I think I was still in school when the magazine came out. But I open the magazine and where's my butthole?
Oh, no.
They used the image and retouched out my butthole.
Well, so they just like smoothed it over?
They put the shadow.
Wow.
And the weirdest part to me was I can't believe I saw this when the magazine came out.
Yeah.
They didn't tell me.
Yeah.
I would have been fine, but I was so like excited. And so I called them and I was like, hey, what's going on? What happened to my butthole? And they were like, oh yeah, our printers said that was just too much, because
it's always the goddamn printers or the credit card processors.
Yep.
It's like so rarely the like creators or the production company itself. It is always like the distribution companies that don't have a relationship to either the consumer or the producer.
Yep.
That are making those decisions, just in case anyone's wondering. Yep. Like that is
and then the advertisers, because the only reason Nerve magazine didn't last is they couldn't find advertising for it.
Yeah.
Because it was borderline being pornographic, and advertisers don't want to add in pornographic magazines.
Ugh.
So I was like, oh my God, I was censored. Me and my butthole was censored.
Oh my God.
And so that was the first taste I got of it. But when it comes to censorship, I ended up doing talks and blowing it up on a slide, that the picture of me and my butthole. So my butthole was probably the size of a softball. My butthole made the rounds.
I also really appreciate you as a photographer and a professional artistic voyeur. I also really appreciate this story about you being willing to let it all hang out as a model as well. Like, even though you say that your voyeurism side is stronger than your exhibitionist side.
Well, I think now.
Yeah.
But 20, almost 20 years later, yes. I mean, I was very much an exhibitionist in my teens and 20s.
Mm.
Kind of like my bisexuality. Maybe they had something to do with each other.
You never know. But then you woke up one day and you were like, oh, I'm actually a voyeur.
I think it was? It was when I started meeting women in the adult industry and was able to photograph them. I was like, I kind of like them having the attention.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I think in my 20s, I was so narcissistic and needing that approval and being out there and, like, wearing really cleavagey clothing and, like, having basically my asshole out on the dance floor. Like I needed that attention. I craved it. And then when I met women that I wanted to collaborate with, I didn't need it anymore.
Totally.
I wanted to make them the center of attention.
Cool.
So I think that's the switch.
Totally.
But so when I think about censorship, I think it's a double-edged sword. There's the part of it that annoys the fuck out of me.
Sure.
Like Nerve censoring my butthole. But then there's the part of it that I know with censorship, people dig around the internet for those images. And I make money off of it.
Right.
If it was out there all the time, it's not scandalous. It's not taboo. And people like paying money for the taboo. People like their buttons being pushed. People enjoy viewing this stuff. So there's parts of it I hate and parts of it that I'm like.
Well, there's totally a difference between having systems of creating, you know, ownership and boundaries and, you know, having to like having to pay for access to the producer in order to be able to see images or certain intensity of images. Like you were saying, if you look at your blog or your Instagram, you can see, you know, maybe like PG-13, like suggestive images or lingerie pictures. But if you want to see the pink, if you want to see, you know, Justine Jolie's, like the natural course of taking a picture with, or of doing a photo shoot with Justine Jolie is that eventually she's just going to fuck the other model, with, you know, mutual consent, I'm sure.
Yes.
That if you want to see that, that you have to pay for access, and you know that that's valuable, and so you've created a model for a structure for people to pay for access to that. I think that there's totally a difference between that and, like, again, like somebody in a position of power saying these are the kinds of images that you and the kind of information that you do and do not have access to, do or are not allowed to see, are and are not allowed to produce, because this question of your butthole being censored by Nerve has to do with the credit card companies or the advertisers or the printers or whatever, like saying, like, we will print all of these sexy pictures, but it is against our company policy to print pictures of a butthole. Like, a butt is fine. An image where a butthole is, like underneath a
or the front of a vulva is fine, but the bottom... Yeah. Is not,
you right know? Or like everything about a breast except the nipple is fine,
or flaccid penises are fine but erect ones are
right, exactly. Like, all, you know, these things in some way they're arbitrary and
no, but
absurd.
That censorship makes people like it even more. They want, oh, that's what,
oh,
I'm saying.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Like, it makes me think about when the Saatchi Gallery did the exhibit in Brooklyn Museum, and this is also like late 90s, early 20s, and there was that Madonna portrait, and I wish I could remember the artist's name, but he made it out of elephant dung.
Right.
And Giuliani freaked out. Oh, and God. Because Giuliani freaked out, everybody went to the Brooklyn Museum. Right. If he didn't freak out, nobody would have seen the show.
Right.
So that's the kind of censorship that excites me and pays my bills and pays your bills.
I see what you're saying.
Like, people like that controversy.
Well, it is an interesting question that I don't know if I have an answer to, or if there even is an easy answer to, which is the question of how much of the thrill of so many things that I will say that I am turned on by have to do with defying a taboo, right? Like, to what, where is the excitement about saying, like, giving a big middle finger to society, telling you what you can and can't see, what you can and can't do, what you can and can't like, who you can and can't be. Like, to what degree do you start to define your identity by in defiance, in subversion, you know? And so, yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, when the powers that be say,
don't do that,
then all of a sudden people want to do it. And then people like you and me are like, step right up.
Ooh, can I touch that? I've been told I can't touch it, so I want to touch it even
and
more.
And you're like, that'll be, you know, $100, please.
Yeah. Pay me to touch it.
Yeah. I mean, it's... I mean, in our society right now, I think the ideal situation is when people who have been disempowered by that kind of censorship and, censorship of identity or artistic expression or whatever, when marginalized people have the opportunity to create those economies to say, like, hey, if you're going to say that this is repulsive and disgusting, like, you do you, but I will be, like, charging admission for you to have access to my, like, underground culture, to my identity, to this information, to these images. Yes. Like, the ideal situation is when people are able to do that. I mean, that's what so much of sex work is, right? Yes. It is well, charging admission for the patriarchy to, you know, like, to have access to the thing that it, you know, what it wants.
Well, talking about political climate and sex work,
yeah,
I hear the GOP convention every 4 years, sex workers flock to that and make tons of money.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
And you know, but then there's like the Super Bowl stuff where people are like, oh, we're like cracking down on sex workers, but then there's like not actually evidence that sex workers are there so much. But what you're getting at, I think, is that
the hypocrisy
is that conservatives are fucking hypocrites.
Yes.
And you can, well, also, you can put that on my Twitter profile. You know,
but like, when the I don't even like saying his name, so I call him King Cheeto.
Sure.
When the pee scandal came out,
which I'm doing a piece on right now.
Amazing.
A pee piece. Yeah. The Golden Showers Kremlin Donald Trump sex work story. Yeah. I mean, I have so much to say about that. I'm so curious what your feeling about it is.
I posted on Facebook. I was like, hey, so I understand that a lot of sex workers do not want to out their clientele because they want to keep making money from them.
Absolutely.
But I was like, but if we can do a Kickstarter to raise enough money for a sex worker who has the proof, like if these ladies of the night in Russia had proof of the Cheeto watching them pee, a photo or a video, how much money would it take that they would release said proof? And I was like, can we start a case? I mean, if Jill Stein can raise millions of dollars for a recount on a Kickstarter, can we do that so that one sex worker is set for life? Like, how many millions of dollars does she need to be set for life to release that and then be protected?
You know, it's a really interesting question because, you know, you have really tragic stories like the DC Madam who had the nerve to release information on all of the conservative politicians who were hypocrites because they were condemning sex workers, taking away our rights, and then turning around and patronizing
like Spitzer.
Like Spitzer, for example. Yeah. And you know, and then she, you know, committed suicide in jail, you know, because people with political power can make your life a living hell. Yes. I mean, even the story that you were telling about the model who sued the guy who sued the woman for making a blacklist, like, yeah, he was wrong. And like, you know, in terms of the law, she prevailed, but then she was out $60,000 in legal fees.
Yes.
And probably an ongoing headache. Definitely. Absolutely. What am I talking about? Like, absolutely. Like, a huge ongoing headache.
Yes.
And people who are marginalized, like, not only can't afford that money, we don't have $60,000 yes. lying around to pay legal fees. Yeah. I mean, I barely had like the money that I needed to like put together my like last will and testament, like, which I've been doing lately with my awesome queer lawyer because I like don't know what the fuck is gonna happen.
Yeah.
You know, but like I barely had that lying around, so like if somebody fucking sued me, I would be fucked, not only because I don't have the money,
yeah,
but also because like the stress of that takes, you know, you should be getting a per diem,
yes,
for like, it becomes like a part-time or full-time job,
yes,
dealing with that, and yeah, you don't have any choice.
Yes.
Anyway.
No, I agree. But I'm also saying that my girlfriend who did get sued and paid out $60,000, she's made a Kickstarter or GoFundMe, and yeah, she's raising the money and she's getting it back. And
that's
like,
awesome.
So that's what I'm saying.
Well,
like,
we should be supporting, you know, we should be supporting people who take a stand against predators.
Yes.
Like, especially now that we have a predator in chief.
Yes. No, when she started this Kickstarter, I reached out to a friend of mine who has a feminist magazine, and I was like, hey, I think you would want to write about this. You should talk to her. And she never got back to me about it. But I was like, this is something that people should talk about.
Is that
about.
Happening right now?
Her GoFundMe? Yeah, I still think it's... I'll write it down for you.
I mean,
you.
I can probably give that a signal boost.
Yeah, yeah. And she's giving prints out.
Yeah, I can totally give that a signal boost. What's her name?
Nicole Vaughn.
I totally know Nicole Vaughn. She designed a dress for me. She is like a multi-talented, awesome.
Yeah.
And you've taken pictures of her yes. as well. So.
And I photographed her. We actually did a trade. I have not been in front of the camera in many years. And her husband is Corin Prescott, who's an incredible photographer.
Totally.
And I heard through the grapevine he wanted to photograph me. So I went up to him at one of his art shows. This is almost now 2 years ago. And I went up to him when his wife was standing right next to him. And I was like, okay, I have a deal. You can photograph me if I can photograph your wife. Trade. Deal? And she stood right there. And she's like, I like this idea. And I was like, good. And he just like, he was like, okay, I guess we've all agreed.
So she has a GoFundMe that, you know, is not only a support of her legal funds for standing up to predatory photographers.
Yeah, I don't know if her blog is still out there. I don't know if she had to take it down or like if she maybe has it in a private place, you yeah. know. I do know that even when I photographed her, we talked about it because she was like, I started this blog because we were talking about certain photographers that I've heard through the grapevine weren't great. And she was like, yep, they're on my blog. Mm. So yeah, but I think that was important, especially there's so many girls out there on Model Mayhem who totally. Are getting into it. It's nice to know there's might be one safe place where they can all discuss, is this person okay or not?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I will make sure to, if you guys want to Google Nicole Vaughn, and then you were just telling me it's the Model Legal Resource Fund yeah. on GoFundMe.
I think that's the name of it, but I think the actual GoFundMe/Brenna and Nicole Legal Fund.
GoFundMe.Brenna and Nicole Legal Fund.
Write that down.
Brennan. Okay. Brennan. Cool. Well, I'll post a link to it.
Cool.
So you've been doing Stag Street for almost 10 years.
Yeah, I realized when I started as just a blog, it's yeah. been basically 10 years. I think this summer it'll be, but when I started it as a paid site, it's been 8.5. So I had it for like a little over a year before it was a paid site.
So what is next for you in 2017?
I am continuing to photograph naked women and still shooting digital, but I'm moving more towards my fine art portion of it, where it's naked women that I use real film,
awesome,
and Polaroids, and then that's where my Patreon is.
Oh, cool. And your Patreon is patreon.com/
Ellen Stag
with 2 G's.
Yeah,
cool.
And Stag Street, you could do 1 G or 2 G's. I own both URLs.
Oh, cool. Oh, smart.
For radio,
so smart.
So I am still going to update on Stag Street. But and some of that content I've also been putting on Patreon, but I really am enjoying the more fine art aspect of it. I just made a video, which I could share with you after, on my process, because a lot of people see my multiple exposure or my film work and they think automatically it's digital because we're in the age of digital.
Right. It looks like a fancy Instagram filter.
Yes.
Right? But which, it's like, no, actually the Instagram filters are based on this process, right?
So many people write to me, what filter is that? And I'm like, it's film. Nope. Yeah, I'll show you this one picture that I actually was showing my boyfriend. And I know he knew it was film, but it's so surreal looking yeah. that he was like, how did you retouch that? And I was like, honey. And he's like, oh, and I was like, I know, it's amazing. Like, I don't even know how I got this image. So, yeah, that's where kind of my direction is. I am still doing digital work. And what I should say is, so I've been doing this work when I met Justine Jolie, it was 2005. Mm. So it's been a little over 10 years that I've been doing this work, I guess 11 years. It was in December 2005 that I met her. So it was the end of the year. But anyway, I, in the past couple years, was getting really depressed, and I almost didn't think I wanted to shoot naked ladies anymore.
Oh, no.
But I found out the reason for my depression was I had a hyperparathyroid.
Oh.
And I had my parathyroid. You have four. Many people don't know what this is, so it's totally okay. I'll go through the short spiel.
Please do.
Your thyroid is basically the computer system to all your hormones. Okay. And your thyroid wraps around your esophagus in the front of your throat.
Okay.
On the back of your thyroid, you have four of these tiny little parathyroids. Okay. A parathyroid is about the size of a grain of rice. And all they do, they're part of the thyroid, but they're kind of separate too. So when people hear thyroid problems, they think I have my thyroid is fine. It was one of my parathyroids. So parathyroids, all they do is regulate the calcium in your body.
Okay.
One of mine turned into a tumor.
Ooh.
And was wreaking havoc in my body.
Oh my God.
And I know I went to a doctor 5 years before I was diagnosed complaining about problems. And I was misdiagnosed for four doctors.
Ugh.
Until I finally found one that diagnosed me properly. Basically, all it does is when it turns into a tumor, it tells your body you don't have enough calcium and it takes it out of your bones. So it was giving me osteoporosis.
Oh my God.
And in doing so, it makes you exhausted all the time.
No kidding.
Your muscles hurt. Your bones hurt. You pee like every 30 minutes. Like even my boyfriend was like, I think you're diabetic. You pee way too much. And I got tested for diabetes. You even when you're so exhausted, you can't sleep properly. I wasn't dreaming the past couple years.
Oh man.
It was the weirdest thing. No sex drive.
It's the worst.
Constipation, ulcer.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I had basically everything on the list except for kidney stones.
Oh man.
And when I finally got diagnosed properly and they took that sucker out, I have been feeling amazing.
Oh
and
my
I'm
God.
Like, yeah.
I'm so happy for you.
So there was this moment where I almost thought I wasn't going to shoot. Like, I remember turning to a friend and I was like, I think this is my last naked lady shoot. I don't want to do this anymore.
Wow.
And doing my book, when I was like giving them all the images, was around the same time I got diagnosed.
Yeah.
And so when the book came out, it came out a month after I had my parathyroid. The book actually also helped me realize, like, I still want to create this work. Like,
that's awesome.
There is a demand for it. I want to keep creating it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a crazy couple years of being depressed. But now I'm, like, back in it and so excited and I have the energy. And, yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, my God. That's so great. So you're promoting the book,
yeah.
The Dirty Girl Collection.
Yeah.
And everybody's, you know. No, I should say, nobody's coffee table is complete without this beautiful book.
Thank you.
And what else is going on for you?
And then just the Patreon and shooting film and Polaroid and
cool.
Creating more work and having the energy and excitement and gusto to do so.
Well, I'm excited about 10 more years of Ellen Stagg's Naked Ladies. And
10 more. I'm hoping 40 more years at least.
Well, then 10 more after that and 10 more after that. Thank you so much for talking about this subject and going all of the all the twists and turns that we did.
Thank you.
Tell everybody all of your internet places that they can find you.
I'll keep it simple. Just the patreon.com/EllenStagg. And stagstreet.com.
Okay. Cool. And what's your Twitter and Instagram?
Oh, Twitter and Instagram are just Ellen Stagg. Also, all with two G's.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ellen like the talk show host, Stagg like the party.
Awesome. But with an extra G.
With an extra G.
Thank you so much for coming on Why Are People Into That? And thank you for helping to create the imagery that attracts people to the show.
I'm so excited about that.
Me too.
I love the pictures we took. Out of all the sets, though, I love the cigar one.
I know. I love it.
It's so sexy.
You set up a projector and it's this like noirish blue light, smoky light thing.
Yeah.
And it was totally spontaneous.
Yes. Yes. Completely.
You're a genius.
You're a genius.
Well, maybe we can shoot together again sometime
soon. I don't know if you remember, but when the first time we met, we're on this panel together and I did my talk and then you did your talk. And as soon as the panel was over, I just turned and I go, we need to talk to each other. And you were like, yes, we do. And I was like, I found a kindred spirit. Like,
oh, that's so sweet. Awesome. Well, I'm glad that we're still friends after all these years.
I know.
Cool. Well, here's to many more years of naked pictures and friendship.
Yes.
Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.